Welcome to Unfiltered and Unfettered.
All right, Unfiltered and Unfettered, back in the his house. And this is your co-host, Tony. Good evening, Fran. Say hello to my co-host.
Good evening, guys. You know, I'm a little flat right now. It's episode 11. We had episode 10, and that was pretty exciting. What's 11?
I mean, 11 is important, and I'm gonna tell you why in a minute.
Because I'm not feeling it.
I'm going to play a clip for you in a minute to tell you why 11 is so important.
Okay. All right.
The first thing I want to do, though, is say on our last podcast, which we made a big deal of because it was 10.
Yeah.
I started out by saying a 10 was important because, of course, in America, we're on the metric system.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to call you out on that because I'm not a boy like you, but I just thought...
If I skewed anybody's educational curve with that...
Carter tried to pull us on the metric system and failed. I'm sorry.
It probably started from him. But we are back with episode 11. It's very exciting. Francis, you're almost completing your deck.
Yeah, I'm almost done this friggin' deck in the backyard.
You know, I just want to give credit. I've been called, as a result of this podcast, Francis, I've been called a bully opinionist.
Well, you know what? The fans know what when they hear. You know what I mean? They know what they're talking about.
You know...
This is a particular fan, though.
It's my son. He called me a bully opinionist. But, you know, when you apply logic to a situation and you know you're right, it's hard not to be one. So I try to throttle back, but I'll credit my son with calling me a bully opinionist.
That's throttling back.
It is throttling back. Fran, episode 11. Mm. We're gaining followers all the time. Very pleased for every new listen we get. I just want to play you a clip to tell you why exactly 11 is so important. And this is a clip, if you've ever seen the movie Spinal Tap, the mockumentary.
Yeah.
This is why this episode 11 is so important.
No, you've seen enough of that one. This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11, 11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
So, Fran, just like Spinal Tap, we go to 11. It's one louder.
That's right.
Okay.
Theoretically, should be one better than 10. So
we are back like a mongoose on a cobra, Francis.
Okay, that's better. That's better.
Do you ever see that on like the Animal Channel or the YouTube or something? Like the cobra's like, he's up there. He's like, I'm bad. I got some wicked bad venom. I got my big hood with the clown face. And the mongoose's like, look, I'm just an unassuming rodent. And the next thing you know, he's shaking him around like an old rope.
Yeah. Crapping
them
out for dinner.
All right, Fran, we are back like a mongoose on a cobra. Let's go to Shotgun in the News. All right, first up, Fran, Obama's starting to make some changes. He appointed Susan Rice as the National Security Advisor and named Samantha Powers to the as the UN rep.
Yeah.
Basically, some conservatives saying sticking it in their eye by... Making Susan Rice the NSA advisor.
I don't know about sticking it in their eye, but you're really going to promote this woman? I mean, the Benghazi file is not closed, in my opinion.
Right.
She's not necessarily... You know, her role was minimal, but she was sent out as the mouthpiece and said some pretty damaging things on the Sunday talk shows. And you're going to promote her in the midst of all this, not to mention the whirlwind that we're going to talk about as we go on here tonight, that's surrounding the NSA. And you're going to put her there... And no, it's not necessarily gasoline on a fire, but it's pretty close. I don't get it.
Making some staffing moves, but yeah. I don't get
not
it either.
Not the right ones, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't either. All right, next. All right, friends. Zaxby Chambliss made a comment about all the sexual stuff going on in the military.
Sexual assault cases.
Sexual assault cases being a result of having a bunch of young people in there full of testosterone and hormones.
Hormones
is what he said,
I mean,
yeah.
when did all these old white dudes become gynecologists? I don't understand. Like, they just can't leave this subject alone. First we had, what's his name, Aiken there in Missouri, talking about, you know, how Biden shut that rape pregnancy down. And now you had Eric Erickson. I don't know if you saw his comments about that the household is not in correct order if the woman out-earns the man. I don't know if you see. He used to be on CNN, now he's on Fox. And now you have Saskia Chambliss in response, and I don't know if you saw the picture, but it might as well have been the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It were nothing but old white dudes. You know, old, yeah, over the hill, dying white guys up there conducting this panel on sexual assault.
I really don't think that he was referring necessarily to the sexual assault cases. I think that he was referring to cases of sexual harassment and those types of things.
Well, but that's what
I know it got interpreted that way.
But that's what that hearing was about. There was a huge number of sexual assault cases last year in the military. That's what they were talking about. And when it got to be his turn, he leads off with the testosterone.
Well, as we know, it was an offhand comment. It was a dumb thing to say.
And
you get trampled for saying that stuff.
You study this stuff when you're working on your PhD. What was the point of that comment? Like, where was he going with that? You know what I mean? Like, there was no avenue after that. Once you say that, you just blame it on boys and girls will be boys and girls?
I don't know. I mean, you would think that somebody in public service would be smarter than that. I mean, it's an offhand comment I might say to you or you might say to me when we're standing in our kitchen just chatting about a subject. But you got to learn not to do that in the public sphere.
And had he done that, one of his aides would have said, yeah, you can't say that in front of the open mic.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But here we go again. All right, next. All right, next up, Fran, a big baseball performance-enhancing drug scandal looming in the offing.
You know, I mean,
they're saying that how many players are they estimating might get suspended?
Last I heard it was in the 20s.
It's in the 20s, yeah.
A lot of these names are off that list that came out of that joint in Florida.
Yeah, ball, whatever it is.
His name, but it's the same list that caught the deer antler spray,
right,
for what's his name in the Super Bowl there, and of course BJ Singh playing golf. So the steroid era may not necessarily be over in baseball, because they're catching an inordinate amount of guys when they have all these things in place.
Here's my take on it. There's a bigger issue here, and the issue is society. And let's face it, we love to watch a guy belting 50 homers.
Right.
We love to watch a guy running a 4-3 catching a touchdown pass. Right. We want that.
Right.
We desire that. And then we all act aghast and cheated when we find out they're taking performance-enhancing drugs.
It's not humanly possible without chemical engineering. But I go back to my original opinion when all this started. Roger Clemens was clearly doping. Why are his records not real? He was pitching against guys who were doping. He was doping. That's a level playing field. Lance Armstrong... That's a level playing field.
Well,
the last Tour de France where he won and they stripped it of him, I think we talked about this. They had to go back to the guy who finished 23rd.
Yeah.
To find a guy who didn't test positive. So Armstrong was playing against a level field. So let him do it. I don't understand. Because now you're talking about A-Rod. I mean, again, is now going to probably retire under this because he's going to get suspended and, you know, he's not coming back after this. I agree. It's a larger problem, but. But I think people were thinking, you know, we're past the steroid era, and then A-Rod and Brian Braun pops up positive on that, and that's a big, you know, that's a big name, a guy who was supposedly clean.
But my opinion, and I probably differ philosophically on this issue than I do on others. I think we have to start recognizing this is a societal problem rather than just these guys, because we all want this, right?
Yeah. No,
we worship sports.
Right, and huge achievements.
And huge achievements in sports. Right. And then when we find out somebody's cheating by taking performance-enhancing drugs...
We want to burn them.
We want to burn them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next. All right, Francis, one of your favorite topics. Hill Dog. The Hillary girl. Hillary Clinton.
You know, we were talking about this before. Her running for president in 2016, I don't think had come into focus yet. You know, it was still murky whether or not she was really going to do it. She's making money hand over fist on the lecture circuit. She started her Twitter account. She started reaching to social media personally. She's identifying herself and her bio. I don't know if you checked her Twitter account, but her bio is It's phenomenal.
I mean, the pantsuit queen or something like that.
Pantsuit aficionado. Yeah. I mean, like, that's how she describes herself. This is clearly, these are the building blocks to start. These are the things she did not do in 2007. She announced it from her living room on her couch. She basically did a YouTube video as the presumptive, well, I'll be the nominee type of thing. Now it looks like she's doing the legwork and she's starting to make contacts and reach out to the normal people, quote unquote, through social media. So the reason that's even in there is just because these are the precursors for a run in 2016.
Okay, we're going to talk about this probably in our next podcast. But just breaking today is huge scandals in the State Department under Hillary's leadership. Prostitution, drugs alleged, sexual assaults of foreign nationals, covered up investigations. Yet another scandal for the Obama administration, but certainly something, you know, when you add on Benghazi, that's going to start to hamper Hillary's presidential bid.
She better brush up, because the first two primary events out of the gate, she's going to hear nothing but these two issues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So she better be ready.
Yeah. All right, next. All right, Francis, must we? Must we, really?
No, this is the closing of the loop here, my friend. This closes the loop. Sergio and Tiger smoke. Well, they don't really smoke the peace pipe at the U.S. Open. Tiger was on the range hitting balls. And, and you don't know this, but on the Golf Channel on U.S. Open week, the coverage starts Monday morning at 7. The tournament doesn't start until Thursday. So for the first 6 hours Monday, its cameras are on the driving range. And you can see Tiger hitting balls, because obviously that's who they're going to focus on. And then at the corner of that one camera, there's Sergio kind of sheepishly inching his way over. And the story goes that Sergio had called Mark Steinberg, who is Tiger's agent, to say, hey, man, I want to do right here. I made a mistake, and I want to just talk to Tiger. And he said, you know what, Sergio, let's just wait till the U.S. Open. You can talk to him yourself in person. So here's Sergio creeping up. They shook hands. They chatted for a few minutes. Today was all the press conferences. All the players do press conferences today. Tiger was asked about it, and he said, no, we didn't apologize. We didn't have time for that. I was working. So, and I think that's in a nutshell, like, Garcia and Woods' career.
That is so sweet. I'm glad that they're making up.
You know, they're not. Garcia went and shook hands, worrying he was going to get his teeth kicked in. Woods is there hitting balls because he's trying to win the tournament.
Because he's going to win the tournament. Got problems in the U.S. Open, though. Big, lots of rain.
Yeah, and Marion is an old golf course that doesn't drain well. And it'll be a good tournament.
All right. Who like golf. That's Shotgun in the News.
It's time for 90 Seconds of Minutia.
All right, Fran. So I just wanted to talk about this a little bit tonight for 90 Seconds of Minutia. Because, you know, in the title of this is kind of like, Where's Paradise, right? And it occurred to me when Michelle Obama got heckled by the LGBT person, mm-hmm. when she was, you know, giving a speech. It's somewhere. I don't know where it was. And
some paid dinner somewhere.
Yeah, and I don't care what her response was or how she handled it. I mean, it was fine. It has no, you know, recourse to what I'm saying. But, you know, because when Obama got elected, people were talking about the second coming of Kavanaugh, obviously referring to JFK's presidency and how there was such a sense of optimism and hope. And, of course, hope and change was Obama's big shtick. And but here we are. We got the largest welfare state ever. We've got this huge drone issue that other countries are really starting to protest and asking us to stop. They're burning the flag. And I'm not even saying that I necessarily object to those things.
Right.
But we're still getting protested in other parts of the world as much as we ever were. Obama made the apology tour and tried to embrace the world, and, you know, it's going to be a newer, fresher world. And it's just and then, of course, with all the scandals that we've been talking about, none of these things are happening. This is as far as you can get from the second coming of Camelot.
From the second coming of Camelot to, you know, Nero whittling on the hill while Rome burns. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it looks like, because you had mentioned this, I think, in a couple episodes ago. We were talking about Nixon when the scandals first started breaking. And one of Nixon's issues, you know, he didn't order the breaking of Watergate, but he didn't react.
Right.
Obama's not reacting here quick enough. They're coming too fast, and he needs to get that way out in front, and he's way behind.
Well, and we've both agreed on this. We've talked about this off of the podcast that, you know, the president is not responsible for the actions of every individual in government, but He is responsible for the response,
right,
for the tone that he sets,
right,
for how he responds to that. And Obama is I feel like he's in the Oval Office crossing his fingers with his eyes shut, hoping it'll go away.
Right.
And
if he doesn't look at it, it's not there. Yeah, I agree. We used to talk to him all the time. It's not about the mistake. It's about the recovery. That's what shows your true character. And unfortunately, as Charles Cook wrote yesterday, the people who supported Obama are probably the ones who are most disappointed. And I just shot a thing back to him and said, well, you can count me among those people. I didn't vote for him in this term, but I'm disappointed because he's not reacting. He's not recovering out of this. He's not, he's displaying his character, which is, you people just don't know, so I'm not even going to bother explaining it. Like, now he did make a half-hearted press conference yesterday where he said, look, you can't have it both ways, which I thought was kind of ironic, which I'll get to in a second. But he said, you can't have 100% security and 0% inconvenience.
Right.
Well, candidate Obama said that very thing to John McCain in the final debate, that we don't need the Bush 100% security intrusion with giving up all our liberties. We can get a better mixture of both. Now he's saying we can't. Now he's saying, no, you can't. You're going to have this inconvenience. That's just the way it is, and it's not that big of a deal. Well, I tell you what, Mr. President, I supported you. I happen to think you were going to do a great job. I disagree. It's a big deal. I don't care that it's a rolling order that started with President Bush. It's a big deal that you're collecting my phone calls.
And as we move into that as a topic to talk about, I mean, that's kind of what they're trying to say now. It's like, well, we're not listening to all your phone. Well, I know that you can't listen to all the phone calls, but you're still collecting them. Collecting everything.
As one analyst said on MSNBC, it would be less intrusive for them to listen to the phone call compared to the data they're collecting. You call me, let's just throw out exactly what's being collected when they say metadata. Here's what's being collected. So, Tony, you call me on your cell phone to my cell phone. They automatically know from that data where you are, where I am. If you're moving in a car, they can tell by the signal movement how fast you're going, which will give them a reasonable idea where you're headed, and based on your vehicle, how much gas you could possibly carry, and then start mapping out known destinations for where you could be headed. They'll know who disconnects first. They'll know how long the conversation is. They'll know our general geographic area, and from that can map our social circles. Not our social media. We're talking like the people with which we commune.
Right.
Day-to-day. That's an ungodly amount of information on people you do not suspect of being terrorists. You know what I mean? Insane. I don't think people get that. Well, it's just on rolling order. Bush started it. Yeah, and people were up in arms when Bush started then as well. Just not as much.
And they've expanded
Bush
it.
Bush never promised this open.
And it still didn't stop the Boston.
And that's what people keep saying. Well, this woman on MSNBC who's starting a new show on Sunday mornings, she said, well, but we need these things just because of the things like Boston. Well, honey, they've been collecting this data since the Bush presidency. 2006 is when it started. And it didn't stop the Boston bombing.
Right.
It didn't stop the underwear bomber on Christmas.
Right.
It didn't stop the shoe bomber. It didn't stop the guy in Times Square. You know who stopped the guy in Times Square? A hobo who looked in the car and said, that looks like a freaking bomb.
Yeah.
There was no metadata collection that solved that. This is about, let's get all the information we can, as much as we can, because we may need it in the future. That is not, that to me, it's just not appropriate.
Well, it's not, and we could even start talking about the Fourth Amendment, right? Unreasonable search and seizure.
Absolutely.
You're searching all of my personal data and seizing it.
Because
yes.
As somebody artfully put it, and we're going to get to this when I talk about hardcore politics, the bedfellows here have been just insane. Like, the people who are making the exact same point will never, ever be on the same side of the aisle again. But on this issue, they are locking arms. And somebody very artfully put it, just because information is ethereal or in the, or in virtual, doesn't make it not yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a double negative. It's still your information. It's your personal property and can still be seized.
And we all assume, or if we don't assume that, we should assume that with the internet and the airwaves, that some of that is getting intercepted by people who shouldn't be intercepting it. But we don't assume that the government is collecting this systematically
on
everything.
Right. Here's the thing. Verizon, the secret warrant, which, again, is... You know, I'm not a law student, and I didn't stay in a Holiday Inn. But that's crap. Secret warrant, right. There's no such thing. If you can't serve a warrant, it's not a warrant, right? So I don't know. They didn't serve me with one.
Well, Fran, let's talk about this guy Snowden.
Well, hold on one minute.
Okay.
Now. They're talking about Verizon. Everyone's saying, well, you know, Verizon customers. That's just because that's the warrant that was made public. There are individual warrants for every phone company. Believe it. So if you're an AT&T customer, if you're an iPhone user, if you're...
Well, and probably internet companies, too.
Sure. Well, yeah. That's what the Prism thing was all about, right?
Yeah.
This software thing that taps into servers. And Zuckerberg, the guy who created Facebook, came out, well, Facebook doesn't participate. And then NSA said, well, Facebook does participate. So now all the tech companies are, like, getting caught in this lie. You know, we're not participating in that. Your data's safe. And this is not about you being able to see your son's friend's pictures on Facebook because he commented on it. We're talking about... the insane amount of gathering of personal data. They had to build, a 3-mile-long warehouse in Utah to store it all. I mean, you know, it's just crazy.
It is.
So I'm sorry. Let's get to
No, that's okay.
Let's get to the lead.
Those are good points. So let's get to Snowden, the guy that blows the whistle on this thing. Big conversation now in many different spaces about, you know, is a guy a hero or a traitor? And, you know, we talked a little before the podcast, and I think you're onto something, is that, you know, maybe he's a little bit of both.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily a hero. Could be. I mean, I think history will probably figure that one out. Traitor? I would say...
You know, we used to teach this lesson back in the NCO Academy when we talked about ethics. We used to teach a lesson based on the Bradley fighting vehicle and how that was such a waste of time and money and effort, and it was liable to get people killed. And, you know, sometimes it comes down to this... you know, tech sergeant or some middle management person that finally has to step up and say, hey, now there's a lot of things that we don't know about the Snowden deal. We don't know if he tried to report this up channel yet, or at least I haven't heard that.
He didn't say did he
try to go to one of his supervisors? Did he try to go to management? We all know, Fran, that lots of times that's almost impossible to do, to go to your manager and say, we're doing something that's wrong. And you know what? Snowden, you know, it was reported he had a $200,000 job, so his manager's probably got a $300,000 job or $250,000, so people are protecting their jobs. And so, you know, this guy makes a dumb move, apparently, of going to Hong Kong and blowing the whistle on this thing, but the fallout, I think, we're yet to see.
I mean...
And they're going to get this guy.
The traitor, I mean, I think had he sold that to the Chinese or someone and said, you know... then I would put him in the class of traitor.
Relevant point.
You know, he just made it public for the American people to see. Now, clearly the Chinese can see it, but he didn't take it and sell it to them secretly. And that's, I mean, it's not like he's Rosenberg. You know what I mean? Like
absolutely.
That's where I would lay in the traitor. But I don't necessarily think he's a hero either. I think he's a dude who saw something that wasn't right, and he took it to people he thought would get the word out. Should he be prosecuted? Probably. He broke the law. Surely he broke contract agreements with the company.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, obviously he must have broke some of those. Did he break the law? Probably. And just like Bradley Manning, he should be prosecuted. But did he do the right thing at the end of the day? I think he did. I think, you know, and like the Cincinnati employees have now said, look, that woman who runs the IRS kept saying it was our fault. No, we're getting orders from Washington to do this. This guy is sitting here saying the president keeps talking about having the most transparent presidency in the, you know, in the history of the world, and they're doing things right, and he was against all this, and yet I'm tapping senators' emails.
Right.
So this can't be right, and I think he finally came to this point of, that something just don't add up. And because he's not making money from it, clearly he gave up a $200,000 a year job, and he's now living in communist, I mean, Hong Kong is technically not part of China, but it is. And, you know.
Well, he's got a long, hard road ahead.
Well, he's got a long, hard road just to stay alive. I mean, I think he made the right move in making himself public. Because had he not, they just would have made him disappear.
Right.
I mean, you would have ate him in your tuna fish probably next week. But, you know, so one guy I follow on Twitter said, you know, I don't have to believe the guy's a hero to agree with what he did.
Right.
And I think that's probably the middle of the road area where I'm at. Hero, probably not a hero. It was a crazy thing to do. He put himself in serious jeopardy. Because he's messing with the federal government, and if you don't think they kill people indiscriminately, you're nuts.
Well, yeah, he's not out of serious jeopardy yet.
Right, so, right. Yeah. And he lost his job, lost his family. So, I mean, he was certainly courageous, and was it the right thing? I think, in my opinion, ultimately it was the right thing to do.
All right, well, I'm sure there'll be more to come on this in the news. Good luck, man. Good luck, dude. All right, let's move on.
Who said that? Who said that?
All right, Francis, it's time for the scintillating version of Who Said That. A special version of Who Said That tonight. All sports quotes, Fran, in honor of the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup. And as always, these quotes are researched by our crack research staff here at Unfiltered and Unfettered to guarantee 100% accuracy. It's not like we're Easter egging these things off the internet. Right. But by my request, no soccer quotes because we only do American sports. So
start paying his staff. So, if you don't
work like this. Here, it's a crack staff. Okay, so only sports quotes tonight.
A tough sled, man. I need
I know. I know. You need a good week. You need a good week. You might get one this time. Okay. Number one, to be the man, you have to beat the man. And your choices are Randy, the Macho Man Savage, snap into a Slim Jim, brother, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair. A little professional wrestling
so
on Unfiltered and Unfettered.
Because Randy Savage is dead. So.
He is dead. Yes.
As in no longer alive.
That would be
so
the.
These are not recent quotes, I think.
Right. Not all. No. Sports quotes.
I have no idea, but I'm going to go Hulk Hogan on that.
Ric Flair. Woo! To be the man, you got to have to beat the man. Okay. 0-1. Quote 2. A little closer to home. The fewer rules a coach has, the fewer rules there are for players to break. And your choices are Jerry Glanville, Bill Parcells, John Madden. If you remember Jerry Glanville, coach of the Houston Oilers, was a bit of a nut, but pretty good coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jerry Glanville, Bill Parcells.
I'll go with Jerry Glanville.
John Madden.
This is not good.
This is not going well.
Well, First of all, you freaking misdirected me because you said NBA and Stanley Cup. We've not even.
I didn't say those. I didn't
yet.
Say those quotes would necessarily be basketball and hockey.
The two people we've picked so far.
I do have basketball and hockey
see
quotes
the coming up. Cup right now.
Okay, here's a basketball quote. Okay. Nobody roots for Goliath. And your choices are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain. Nobody roots for Goliath. I mean, that's a big sumbitch who said that quote right there. That's all I got to say.
Well, all three of those guys are big sumbitches. What are you talking about?
Well, that's why they're all on the list. We only put Spud Webb.
I'm gonna go that dope-smoking, what's his name there? The dude in the middle. Who was the second guy you picked?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay. Who's the redhead play for Portland? That's who I was thinking.
Bill Walton,
that's what I was thinking. Okay, sorry. I'm off track. Bill Russell. I'll go with Bill Russell.
0-3. That was Wilt Chamberlain.
Really? That seems a little too...
That was.
Seems like a little too...
Okay, hockey quote, Fran.
Well, here we go.
All right, here we go.
Is this from the 50s? Is this Rocket Richard? These guys aren't even alive.
You need to get this one. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And your choices are Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe.
That's got to be Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. 1-3. Thank God I put that quote in there.
Well, you picked that dude who I actually was, who was playing when I was a 5-year-old.
Okay, last quote. And this is a fun one. You might not get it.
They've all been a blast so far.
I quit school in the 8th grade because of pneumonia. Not because I had it, because I couldn't spell it. And your choices are, this is going
to
be a tough one.
I might be
one.
Able to pick this one out of thin air, I think.
Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, Rocky Marciano.
Man, I want to say Mike Tyson, but I don't know that he got to the 8th grade.
I quit school in the 8th grade because of pneumonia. Not because I had it, because I couldn't spell it.
Did you see him on the Tony Awards?
No,
oh,
I didn't.
I'm gonna go with Tyson. I mean,
Rocky Marciano.
Yeah.
1-4, Francis.
Yeah, I don't think Tyson got to 8th grade.
A tough night.
But he's got the best quote ever. The best one that I use all the time. Everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth.
That's right.
That is applicable to anything.
That's right. All right, so another scintillating edition of Who Said That by Mr. Friend.
Political quotes. This is all nonsense right. You've been throwing out.
Next week, all political. Next podcast, all political quotes, Fran.
You're a bully.
I'm a bully opinionist. Get it right.
That's right.
All right, Fran, and that means it's time for hardcore politics. What are you winging tonight?
Tonight is about strange bedfellows, and this is where we've come to in this country, right? I mean, just flashback, 3 years ago, and it was pretty clear lines of demarcation, right? You had the Tea Party, wild conservatives. You had Occupy Wall Street, wild, unshowered liberals, right? And then you kind of had that very, softening lines in between, meeting in the middle somewhere. But there was very clear conservative, progressive
sides. Yep.
Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, these were the voices of that. Then you had Rachel Maddow, Pick a Lesbian on the Air on MSNBC, were the voices of the liberal movement. Ezra Klein from Washington Post. Keith Olbermann.
Whack jobs.
Yeah, all these whack jobs from the left and then the right. And of course, social media had all their people too. So this NSA scandal has just turned everything on its ear. Like, I don't think people understand the gravity of this. And all you need to do to understand it is look at who's agreeing with who to tell you that this is a serious issue. This is not some partisan political point scoring system. You have, on one side, you have Ari Fleischer, who was President Bush's first press secretary, and was considered to be a scalpel. I mean, the way he cut people up, right? He was just a demon.
He was good.
You have Glenn Beck. You have and these two guys are in agreement, of course, because they're conservatives. They think what this guy did was great. They also agree with the administration's handling of the drones and that kind of situation. Then you have the administration, which is one Barack Obama, and they're in agreement, right? They're all in agreement on this. Like, all right, let me take that back. The administration and Fox News is in agreement. Ari Fleischer and Glenn Beck have spent the last week throttling Fox News because Fox News has said this guy should be prosecuted. He's a traitor to the country. Then, of course, this is what the administration is saying. You have Glenn Beck and Ari Fleischer who, Glenn Beck was born at Fox News. I mean, I believe he was birthed in one of the studios.
Right. Yeah.
He's now saying Fox News should be ashamed of their coverage of this. Ari Fleischman and Glenn Beck line up with Glenn Greenwald, the reporter who broke the story. Glenn Greenwald couldn't be more liberal if he invented the term, right? He is the guy that Glenn Beck fears. And they are in lockstep over this issue. They both think that this guy did the right thing. They both refer to him in sort of hero-type terms, and they think they think there definitely should be more said about it. Ari Fleischer, same way. Then you have Lindsey Graham and John McCain. Graham is a Tea Partier, or at least he says he's a Tea Partier when his office is up for election.
Right.
Is now siding with the administration. He says, well, I don't have a problem with people collecting my data. I didn't do anything wrong. Why do I need to worry? Well, thanks a lot for that, Lindsey. So much for, innocence of proven guilt. I mean, and that's a non-sequitur. That's nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But that's the kind of nonsense we're getting. But here you have a staunch Republican from South Carolina agreeing with Barack Obama.
But the point you're making is that clearly defined lines are starting to break down over some of these issues.
And I got it mixed up when I was sitting there talking about it. That's how confused they are. You go on Twitter, you need a scorecard. Because, Hannity should be attacking Glenn Greenwald. Instead, he's saying, oh, no, this guy did a great job. You have Glenn Beck, who should be attacking Glenn Greenwald. Instead, he's saying, this guy is showing us a hero. This guy was a hero who did this because he's proving the administration is lying and cheating. Then you have Ari Fleischer, who agrees with Obama's drone policy. I mean, it just doesn't, it's hard to keep track of what's where everyone is on this issue. Everyone's like, no, not where they should be. We've had 3 years of this is where everyone should be on the right, this is where everyone should be on the left. This particular issue has confused all those lines to the point where if there was a civil war here, I don't know who would shoot at who. It's hard to know.
And Fran, I kind of credit that with, it's a lesson that we both learned in the military and we used to teach, right? And it's Be careful of who you criticize. Be careful when you criticize the boss, because you might be the boss one day and find out some of the things that he was doing were necessary.
Right.
So, you know, like Guantanamo Bay, going to close that down, right. Going to stop the drone program. Then the guy gets elected president and finds out, you know, some of these things may be necessary right. To a degree.
And now
things start to flip-flop and start to become very confused, right?
And we've talked about that, right? As candidates, they all say things. Even John McCain sure. In the military, Mitt Romney, sure. Barack Obama, both years, said things as candidates. Hillary Clinton said things. When they become the nominee, that's when they start getting NSA briefings. So they start to, and some candidates will change their tune before their conventions.
Right.
A lot of them don't. But when they get in office, if they happen to win, they're not so quick to keep up with those promises they made during the campaign in reference to national security, national policy, military, because they don't know enough to know what they don't know. But Barack Obama's beyond that. He's gone past, this is not that.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Not, this is not, right. I didn't know this before, so what I said before doesn't make sense. He knows now, this is in his second term. And what he's doing, what he's continuing to do, the policies, while he's still blaming Bush, which is so hard to understand. Like, bro, you're doing it worse than him, and you're blaming him for starting right. this. That he's got everyone so confused and so, you know, they don't know what side to come down on. That, to me, is how you know this is a real issue. This is not a birth certificate issue. That drew clear lines in the sand, and you had the morons on the right and the morons on the left. Now the morons are all mixed, which tells me that this is a serious issue. This one is serious. This one is going to stick. He's going to have to pay the piper for this particular issue. You got guys like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz from the Republican side who are saying, I never heard this. No one ever told me this. And then you have Democratic senators saying, oh, we were all briefed. And the president said, well, they were all briefed. Then you've got a couple Democrats come out this past week saying, oh, no one ever told me that.
Nobody told me that.
I'm with Ted Cruz. Well, Ted Cruz is like the second coming of like a KKK wizard. And yet, he's got now friends on the left saying, yeah, I'm with him. I never got briefed on this. So I would say, you know, watch who's agreeing to disagreeing. If it's all convoluted, this is bad. That's a bad sign for the administration when people from both sides are either taking up your charge or trying to tear you down over it. It's a serious issue. This is just not one of those stupid ones that we chased for 4 years, that he was a Muslim, that his birth certificate was wrong. That was all nonsense. And by the way, apparently a smokescreen to keep all this stuff out of the news.
Maybe so.
Maybe
that's
if
right.
he focused on this in year one, he wouldn't have got a second term.
Right.
I'm done. I'm just disgusted.
We'll go to the big board now. But we're going to introduce something new, a little new technique for the big board.
Yeah.
As you probably both know, me and Fran are both sports fans. The draft has become, went from, you know, when we were kids, who paid attention to the draft?
Yeah, you couldn't even find the radio station.
Now it's a big deal. And I'm a big fan of the sports cliche, which really surfaces in the draft. And when we talk about is, they say a guy can play in space.
Right.
He can play in space.
He's got a high motor.
And that's what they say about good white guys, right?
any good
white defensive player, they got a big motor. They play with a big motor. Which was demonstrated by the coach of my own team when they got the high dollar Paul Kruger from the Ravens, and they brought him over and he introduced him and he said, I love this guy, he's got a big motor. I mean, he just fell right into it. But for example, and the thing I love about it is it becomes a cliche the first time you hear it, right? So this year the new one was with Geno Smith, the quarterback from West Virginia. They said he had slow eyes.
That's why he fell
to the second round. So as soon as you hear slow eyes, it's a cliche, right? Got quick feet, slow eyes, right?
Yeah.
Plays in space, can turn his hips.
He can spin it.
So the guy's just an athlete when you don't have anything else to say about him. So we're going to take that principle and we're going to start applying it to our big board candidates, which today we talked about last podcast. We're going to put Trump. We're going to put the Donald on the...
When you drop $1 million, that to me means you're serious. I know it's Trump and he could drop $1 million, you know, in slots, but... That's a lot of money in an exploratory commission. So that makes me believe he's serious about looking into running. So.
Well, and he's got a big war chest, Fran.
Yeah, that's right, big war chest, unlimited. He's savvy. He's got moxie.
He's got moxie.
Right.
You know, this guy's got moxie. We don't know how far he's going to go. We don't think he's going to go far.
Right.
But he's got a big war chest, and he's got moxie.
And this other one I've heard people say about him, I don't get this one. Has the pulse of the American. What American people does he have the pulse of? I don't get it. But
not mine. But maybe it's because he's not a politician that they might.
Well,
maybe they say
he's a businessman, right?
You know,
he knows, right? He's hired and fired people. clearly.
So Donald Trump, real estate mogul, born in 1946 in Queens, New York. Wife Melania, who, you know, all his wives have been...
That's actually only his third... I was surprised when I found out it's only his third wife. I thought he'd be on way more than that by now.
Of course, Fordham University, Wharton School of Business, and TV star with The Apprentice, and then The Celebrity Apprentice.
And hated in Scotland. I read that today.
Hated in Scotland.
He tried to build a golf course and with a resort hotel. Because that's what when he builds golf courses, he puts monstrous resort hotels on them as well. And the people in Scotland were like, you know, no, that's not going to fly. And he just thought, well, you can't stop the money. And apparently they could. So he's not made friends over there, but he's not running for president of Scotland, so it doesn't matter.
So Donald Trump going on the big board. Big board's up to date. We'll put we'll get the Donald on there, and we'll get his candidate cliches up there as well.
He's independent now. He was a registered Democrat until 2009. Obama became president. He became a registered Republican. He just threw that off. He's now... So, and the only reason I bring that up is because this begs the question, how is he going to run? Is he going to run as a third-party independent, or is he going to run?
Going to be a big money Ross Perot?
He could do it, right?
See, yeah.
And Perot's mistake was that he quit and then tried to come back.
Right.
And Perot stayed the course. He might have done some damage. Trump could do more damage. I mean,
people, guys like Perot and Trump, they do damage to the Republican candidates.
Absolutely right.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
Sure. And I mean, the unintentional comedy is just going to be phenomenal. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. But
it will be fun.
So he's a registered independent. So I'll be curious to see what he does.
All right, Fran. Another episode of Unfiltered Unfettered.
Number 11.
Almost in the books, 11. As always, it's been a lot of fun. Got any final comments for us?
No, man.
I'm going to be anxious to talk about Hill Dog's problems next podcast.
You know, we're either going to have to start going weekly or we're going to have to beef up the writing because the scandals come fast. Maybe that's what we'll do. We need to put a scorecard out on the scandals.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to put
it's coming fast scorecard. And furious now, man. I mean...
All right. Well, as always, enjoy yourself. Thanks for the listen. And we'll see you next time on episode 12. Emily, please take us out.
Thank you for getting unfiltered and unfettered.